everybody that you run into. How in the world do you think anybody's supposed to respect you? It's a brand new day. Respect yourself. Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown. We've got Declan Curran, the producer, here in the studio with us. No guest today. And Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust. Of course, the name Framework will be going out of existence from about July the 1st with the merger of Connect Supporting Recovery and Framework to be called Ember. So I guess after January the 1st, Take It From Us will be brought to you by Ember Trust. Now, over the last couple of weeks, I've been touched by suicide. I guess through my bridge club, suddenly we heard that one of our members, who seemed a very robust woman, aged just 72, had died suddenly. Somebody mentioned to me a death notice in the paper, and it really surprised me. I actually had played some bridge with this woman. When I talked to one or two people in authority, it was suggested that this wasn't a natural death. And while they weren't using the S word to describe her death, I think all the implications were that there was something a bit unusual about this death. This coincides with me reading a book by Dawn French, which is called Dear Fatty. And of course, Dawn French is famous for The Vicar of Dibley, but also for her humour, her films, her association with the Saunders woman. It was French and Saunders. They're famous as actors. Dawn French has written this book called Dear Fatty, and in it she talks about the loss of her beloved father. And her father was in the UK forces, but he left the forces, and his life was not so easy after the regimented and structured life that he had enjoyed with his family and, of course, with Dawn as well. There was an emergency. Dawn was asked to go back home because the father couldn't be found. And it turned out that he had said good night to his wife. He'd kissed her, and he had taken the car and a bottle of sherry, and he'd gone up close to the house, and he had committed suicide there. The interesting thing about this to me is the questions in Dawn French's mind about the suicide, because there's so many questions that are raised as to why it happened, what the person might have been thinking at the time, whether the father experienced depression, very serious depression, and she wonders whether or not he was howling in agony. If I can just quote from the book, were you howling in agony, raging in your depression? And this is one of the questions that comes to Dawn's mind in her grief about the loss of her father. And I'd read from the book here some of these questions that must be raised for all of us when we lose somebody to suicide. And Dawn asks, was your head swimming? Or were you howling in agony, raging in your depression? Did you go out still fighting? Or did you surrender to the stillness, willing it to take you? Did you weep? Did we cross your mind? Did flashes of our life together show inside your head like a splendid movie? Or did you have to extinguish any thought of us so that you could do it? Did you say goodbye? To what? To whom? To the night sky? Or the inside of the car? Or the life lived? Did you sputter and drown? Did you choke, struggle? Did you just float away? Did you see a light? Did you hear a voice? Did dead beloveds hold their arms out and welcome you to their dead place? Is that where you are? I've lost you. Where are you? Can you see me? I'm in effing agony, you selfish bastard. Don't you care? How could you do this to us? How dare you steal our happiness? Why didn't you say? Why didn't you give us a chance to stop you? Was it our fault for not noticing? Did you want us to stop you? Did you pray that someone would knock on the car window at the very last moment and drag you out? Did you consider that we couldn't, can't live properly without you? So you lied when you told me you would always be there for me. Were you so very alone with your hopelessness? Did you think we would be better off without you? Did you think that you didn't matter? Did you think you had failed? Failed us? Did you feel ashamed? Did you suppress your sadness so much that it started to eat you from inside? Well, it just underlines this more questions, many, many more questions that Dawn French raises about the death and suicide of her father, her beloved father. So many questions, and they go on. Were you racked with wretchedness and unable to see light anywhere? Was it dark and terrifying in your head? Did you want to be in a light place, to be hushed and tranquil? What did you hope it would be like? And so the questions go on, and I can just imagine that those questions for any listeners who may have had a loved one or friend who has died from suicide, they probably are really considering those questions and considered them at the time of the loss of their friend or family member. So it just raises the whole issue of how devastating suicide can be for loved people. So that's just a little departure, I guess, from the normal style of Take It From Us. What say we take a music break, Declan, after reading there's a page, almost two pages of questions that Dawn French had in her mind and wrote in this book called Dear Fatty. It's a lovely book.
Yeah, she's good value, isn't she? Her and Joe Brand together in the same room is, cause for cackle.
Right.
This song here I was going to play a few weeks ago. Remember when we had the gardening group out at South Auckland doing the horticultural?
Oh, yes.
And,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Te Whangai Trust.
That's the puppy. And this is by, I think it's called Efteling or whatever, E-F-T-E-L-I-N-G, and it's a song called In This Together.
Right.
And it says pandered room in this together. So anyway, have a listen, see what you think. You always take it from us, Mental Health Radio, and broadcasting on Planet 104.6 FM every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
Every shade of blue. see everything that's there. Do you care?
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And a beautiful ending to that song, very peaceful.
Yeah, I like those sort of ones. They're good just to lay out in the middle of nowhere with...
They're good to lay out in the middle of nowhere and enjoy.
Yeah, lay out in the middle of nowhere and just kick back and just... I usually end up sitting on the deck with those headphones on and go to sleep while I'm reading, which really annoys me. The purpose is to read a book, not to go to sleep.
Oh, well, it shows that you're relaxed and able to, have a bit of a nap. And well, I guess that leads us on to...
If I want to read the book and I'm getting nappified, then I just get up and walk around so that way I can't fall asleep.
Oh, okay, so that you don't nap and you can enjoy the book. But, you know, being able to nap, I think during the day can be very important. The older you get, probably the more important it becomes. And it's a good segue, a good lead-in, actually, to an article that was published in the Framework Wellbeing newsletter this month. And it's headed up Mindfulness and Sleep. And I must say that sleep has been a bit elusive for me recently. I've even had to resort to taking half a sleeping tablet for the last few days, which disturbs me, but at least I'm getting a very good night's sleep and it is only half a tablet. But here's a quote from somebody who's having difficulty sleeping. I feel totally exhausted. My head's on the pillow, my eyes are closed, but sleep won't come. My mind won't shut up. Well, I guess we all know how important it is that we get a good night's sleep, but unfortunately, sometimes we just can't get our mind to slow down enough to allow us to drop off. Our mind wants to mull over the things that happened today or the things we mustn't forget to do tomorrow. We can toss and turn for hours, constantly running through those often mundane things, time and time again. During those dark times when we realise that sleep isn't happening, our muscles tense and our body seizes up. Our breathing and heart rate can quicken. And so falling asleep becomes even more difficult. When we do eventually doze off, it seems like we get 5 minutes and then the alarm goes off. Sometimes when we get to sleep early, our frantic mind wakes us up at 3 a.m., demanding we pay attention to yesterday's mistakes or tomorrow's problems. No matter what we do, we can't get back to sleep, and the result is we spend our days feeling tired and listless, achieving only half of what we want to do. So sleep is a huge problem for many people, especially when they are stressed or struggling with anxiety or depression. But this article from Framework's Wellbeing newsletter says there's some good news. Good sleep is more under your control than you might think. Lots of research has shown that mindful sleep habits are a major key to restful slumber. That is, mindful sleep habits, and I do pursue these myself. But there is some bad news. If you're in the middle of a period of insomnia right now, you've probably already switched off this article. It says, once we are able to solve this situation, but only when you're prepared to listen. So it says here, once we are in that state of insomnia, things probably won't work for us. If that's your situation right now, before reading any further or listening any more, please take yourself aside and give yourself a good talking to. You are a capable person and able to solve this situation, but only when you're prepared to listen to and apply the advice given here. You have what it takes to fix this problem, but you have to commit to applying each of the ideas that we've got here for at least a week before making any judgments. So it says here, mindful sleep habits. And to start off, to prepare for your mindful sleep, it says 1 hour before bedtime, start your preparation. Get your bed, your bedroom, and yourself ready so that you can go to sleep immediately you feel relaxed and sleepy. So the first thing to do is to dim the lights. Start winding down the brain and body early by dimming the lights. Engage in activities that will relax you and pass the time quietly. Relaxing activities include quiet reading, listening to soft music, and we were listening to some lovely music that Declan played for us just a few moments ago, having a massage or taking a hot bath. And one of the things that was recommended to me by my yoga therapist was to bathe my feet in hot water. And I've gone back to that pursuit, and I think it is definitely working. You could do relaxing, low-impact exercises such as yoga or gentle stretching in the evening can also help promote sleep. It says avoid screens on your mobile or laptop or your PC. So it says stow away your tablet, phone, computer and TV for the night. The blue light emitted by most screens is especially disruptive, and although you can minimise the impact by turning the brightness down, the better option is to turn them off completely. Don't read with backlit devices. Tablets that are backlit are more disruptive than e-readers that don't have their own light source. It says 10 minutes before bedtime, begin a mindful meditation session. Sit upright in a comfortable chair, close your eyes and take 3 or 4 slow, deep breaths. On each exhale, feel as though you're sinking deeper and deeper into your chair. Slowly scan your body from head to toe, looking for areas of tension, and then spend some time relaxing those areas. When you're feeling quiet and relaxed, start to pay attention to your breathing. Focus on the movement of your chest or the feeling of the air passing through your nose. Stay focused on your breathing and notice when your mind begins to wander. As soon as you realize that you've wandered off, gently bring your mind back to the breathing. No matter what people tell you, the simple truth is that you can't control what your mind does. You can only notice it and then bring it back to the breath. Stay in the meditative state. make sure you don't fall asleep in the chair, and as soon as you feel deeply relaxed, get into bed and resume focusing on the breath. If after 10 minutes you're still unable to fall asleep, get up, sit in the comfortable chair again, and repeat the meditation exercise. Don't get back into bed until you feel sleepy, and don't sleep in the chair. If you wake up during the night with your mind buzzing and you can't get back to sleep, work with the breath meditation exercise until you can feel your mind slowing down. Try to go to sleep and get up at the same time every day. I mean, that's a piece of advice that I've read so often. This helps set your body's internal clock and optimizes the quality of your sleep. Avoid sleeping in on weekends. The more your weekend weekday sleep schedules differ, the worse the jet lag-like symptoms you'll experience. Plan your naps. Well, Declan was just talking about his naps on the deck while he's trying to read. It says, while napping is a good way to make up for lost sleep, if you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep at night, napping can make things worse. Limit them to 15 to 20 minutes at or before lunchtime, Declan.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter what time I go. I just start, like, having convulsive jumps in the chair as I come to, and then if I'm not lucky, I drop the book. So,
right.
Lost cause, yeah.
It says here, fight after dinner drowsiness. If you get sleepy way before your bedtime, get off the couch and do something mildly stimulating, such as washing the dishes, calling a friend, or getting clothes ready for the next day. If you give in to the drowsiness, you may wake up later in the night and have trouble getting back to sleep. Also, as important as to get as much natural light as possible during the day, keep curtains and blinds open and try to sit close to the window. Take your work breaks outside in sunlight, exercise outside, or walk your dog during the day instead of in the dark. It says also that we should avoid late-night television. Not only does the light from a TV suppress melatonin, but many programs are stimulating rather than relaxing. Try listening to music or audio books instead. Always make your bedroom dark. Use heavy curtains or shades to block light from windows, or try a sleep mask. Also consider covering up electronics that emit bright light. If you get up during the night, keep the light off. If you need some light to move around safely, try installing a dim night light in the hall or bathroom, or use a small flashlight. This will make it easier for you to fall back to sleep. Take regular exercise early in the day. Exercises sleep better and feel less sleepy during the day. And I can confirm certainly that on Sunday night, after being over to Waiheke, walking from my place in the central city down to the ferry building, and then walking quite a distance around Ostend and back again, and then walking back from the ferry to my place, that I certainly slept better on Sunday night as a result of doing that exercise. It says the more vigorously you exercise, the more powerful the sleep benefits. But even light exercise, such as walking for 10 minutes, can improve sleep quality. It can take several months of regular activity before you experience the full sleep-promoting cortisol. This isn't a problem if you're working out in the morning or afternoon, but exercising too close to bedtime can interfere with sleep. Try to finish moderate to vigorous workouts at least 3 hours before bedtime. And one of the standard traditional messages is limit caffeine and nicotine. Caffeine can cause sleep problems even 10 to 12 hours after drinking it. Similarly, smoking is another stimulant that can disrupt sleep, especially if you smoke close to bedtime. Also avoid big meals at night. Try to make dinner time earlier in the evening, and that's a bit easier now that there's daylight saving. And avoid heavy, rich foods within 2 hours of bed. spicy or acidic foods can cause stomach trouble and heartburn, which can interrupt sleep. And also, we've got to avoid alcohol before bed, while a nightcap may help you to relax, it can interfere with your sleep cycle once you've fallen asleep. And the final word from the Framework Wellbeing newsletter, which was published this month, is most of us go through times when we find it difficult to sleep, but almost everyone comes through it and finds a way of coping. You are strong and capable, and you have everything you need to solve this challenge. There is no quick fix, but the dedication and determination that you put into it will find the path that works for you. Mindfulness is well known as a relaxation technique. When used consistently, it becomes a powerful habit that you can use to calm your mind when it's racing or worrying. If you study these techniques and use them every day for 2 to 3 weeks, you will find your path to great sleep. So if anybody listening would like that information, they can text me on 021-976-564, and I can scan that. And if you give me an email address, then I can send that to you. I think there's some really great examples there. As I've mentioned on Take It From Us, my psychologist about 12 months ago, when they discharged me, said she wanted me to do 15 minutes of deep breathing before I went to sleep and 15 minutes of deep breathing when I woke up. And I think it's a great way to relax the brain, relax the body, feel myself getting deeper and deeper into the mattress, and sleep certainly becomes easier. I've just been through a little bit of a relationship breakup, which of course has just interrupted my calmness, and as a result of that, I think the sleep is a little bit more elusive, but I'm sure it is getting better. So there we are, Framework's Wellbeing newsletter on mindfulness and sleep. And mindfulness not only is a benefit to sleep, but I think it's a wonderful way of managing calmness during the day, of beating anxiety and stress, and generally sort of living in the now means that we don't worry about the future too much. So just a few tips from the old bloke on Take It From Us. What have you got for another track, Declan?
Well, I was just going to say first, when I used to do night work in the city council, when you came home, I reckon that vampires and werewolves had the right idea. You pop yourself into your little box, put the lid on, and away you go. Dark as could be.
You weren't sleeping in a little box with the lid on.
No, I've wanted to sometimes. I was just going to throw a little disclaimer in there about the feet and the hot water.
Oh, the feet in the hot water?
Yeah, I'm just saying, if anyone's listening that's in Rotorua, you might want to put a thermometer in first, because there's quite hot stuff down there, apparently.
Well, and yes.
And I am rather bubbly today. Yes, I had an X-ray from the dentist yesterday, so I suppose you could say, I know it's weak, I'm radioactive.
Wow.
Okay,
I think you might be radioactive most
Tuesday. That's why. Well, is that why you say I'm glowing?
Yeah.
Yeah. This one, I'm going to take you back to the 80s. Billy Idol, Eyes Without a Face. You're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday right here on Planet FM 104.6 between 12:30 and 1:30. And here's Billy Idol with Eyes Without a Face.
Please.
This is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. We've got a bit of a magazine-style show today. No guest in the studio. I'm host Sheldon Brown and technician Declan Curran here.
I was just thinking, it reminds me when we were young, we used to go through Woolies and McKenzie's and we used to pick up all the lollies that had fallen on the floor. It's like a pick and mix, you know, like today's show. It's good.
Oh, pick and mix. Yeah, well, I see. Yeah. I was wondering what the relevance.
You were wondering
of,
where I was going with
yeah,
that, weren't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. And with Rotorua and the hot water there too.
Nowhere spooky.
That's a bit of a worry.
Nowhere spooky.
Nowhere spooky. But we promoted the show yesterday on Facebook and through our email database to say that Take It From Us has put an entry into the New Zealand Radio Awards. That's for the 2018 year. The award had to be in, or the entry had to be in fairly early, about February, March this year. It was quite a big deal to put the whole thing together, but the most significant thing was reducing our 60-minute broadcast down to only 10 minutes and providing a 200-word synopsis of what the show was about. Now, the middle of last year, we had a client of Mind and Body, Simon Frost, who described himself as a hard man, a kickboxer, and he was also a musician, and he played some of his own music on guitar in the studio. It was a great show, and we've edited this down. And the whole point about this really is that even though people have looked up to Simon as a hard man, as a sportsman, well-built, athletic, a kickboxer, and a successful musician and artist, he's had his challenges in mental health. And February in 2018, he had a spell in North Shore's acute psychiatric unit. And I think that really sort of made him realise that he needed to take his mental health and some of his drug taking and alcohol use more seriously. So here's the edited version of that 60-minute interview done last year. You can actually access that on our Take It From Us website at www.takeitfromus.org.nz, which is actually on the Framework website. Here it is, the 10 minutes of an interview on USB.
When are the finals for that? When we know whether we're in?
Oh, we'll know later in the year, I think middle of the year, Dick.
Oh, righto. So we've got two things to look forward to, the end of year function and also for the rewards.
Yeah.
Awards, I should say. Alrighty.
My take is that many things have been tough for Simon, but a spell in an acute psychiatric hospital recently has lifted his personal awareness of his boundaries and how to move forward. In his plan is competing in a high-profile kickboxing competition. He's also into martial arts. And to take more notice of his intense emotions, which sometimes get him into trouble. Well, Simon, welcome to you. That summary captures some of your personal challenges.
Definitely, yes. I feel, you know, I've dealt with my mental health kind of issues. I've got anxiety and depression. Those things I've kind of worked through for years and years, sometimes on my own, sometimes through counselling. And my those also kind of led into addiction issues where I used to drink and do a lot of drugs, and they, I guess, were an escape from trying to deal with the real issues that were, I guess, the demons in a box that I'd kind of tried to put away and hide and not deal with. And yeah, I guess it's just about my own personal journey and my own personal ability to deal with the things that I've been given.
How successful was the booze and drugs in sort of sorting out your anxiety and depression?
Oh, it was completely counterproductive, you know. It has no merits whatsoever as a way to deal with anything, with any real substance, you know, with any real kind of end goal. It is merely a distraction from actually having to face the things I needed to face. And right now I'm in the process of facing those demons.
What have people told you and what have you learnt about sort of where anxiety and depression come from?
A lot of it's probably due to my upbringing. The first kind of formative years of my life, it was quite turbulent, and my father left when I was 6 weeks old. I had a stepfather after that who was angry and abusive, so for the first 10 years of my life I lived in this pretty toxic environment. My mum took myself and my siblings away from him. There were a lot of issues going on within the family, and there were, yeah, obviously the anger issues, the unhealthy environment of being around somebody who's so toxic, and found it really easy to fly off the handle and lose it a lot. And then on top of that, the major thing was there were allegations of sexual abuse as well.
When you grow up in that toxic environment as you've described, and I guess there's no real positive role model there.
Not really. My mum was always there. My mum is still there. She's been the one that's been my rock throughout my 39 years of walking this earth. So, yeah, she was there. But I guess, you know, she was young as well. She was dealing with her own things, trying to deal with that. She's got four kids. There's a lot of stresses involved. And after having to leave, then she had to take on more of a provider role, which took away a lot of time from us. My coach, who is just opening up his new gym over in Ellerslie, the Combat Academy, he's a UFC fighter, Dan Hooker, and he's an excellent coach and an excellent guy. He was having the opening day on Saturday, and I was lying on the couch with my blankets on me, dealing with the anxiety of turning up to this event where I'd actually have to socialize with people, and it was really, really hard. And I was talking to one of my friends online who I haven't seen for a while, but his partner also deals with anxiety, and she even runs her own Facebook page, a group where people can talk about anxiety. And he was just saying, you know, just go along. You don't really have anything to lose. Even if you go early and leave early, just turn up. Show him that you care and that you're there to support what he's doing, but you don't have to stay the whole time. And, you know, it just gave me that little kind of pat on the back, or the encouragement to actually go, okay, I can probably do this. The key was support. I had support there to kind of reassure me and take away some of those insecurities, and that seemed to snowball out of control sometimes, that kind of convinced me not to go.
It's fair to say that you've had a spell in an acute psychiatric hospital not so long ago.
Two months ago. Yeah.
You know, a locked environment. It's not that pleasant being there.
I hated it.
You hated it. You've got to gain the trust of the staff to even get out the door.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And they were, yes, I got put in the hospital because of my high risk of self-harm. I was at a point in my life where everything had imploded, and I needed to be in that environment to take away all those different negative stimulus that were pushing me to those thoughts of self-harm. The hospital was it was a new experience for me. I'd never been into a ward like that before, so it was pretty new. Physically felt safe. Most places I go, I'm the apex predator. Wherever I go, that's just how it is, and that's how I felt in there, but it still didn't stop the whole experience feeling uncomfortable and out of my comfort zone.
I mean, it is quite a conflict that you are. You described yourself just outside the studio as a weapon.
Yes.
And, you know, you're a kickboxer, you're a martial arts exponent. It is quite an inconsistency, if you like.
It's really bizarre. I don't really understand it myself. Like I say, I guess it's partly a distraction for me. I've always been a sports person, an athlete, right from the very young age. You know, I won my first race at school when I was 5, and I was aware that I had ability as an athlete, and then that just kept growing and growing and growing. Played rugby league, did pretty much nearly every sport under the sun, just trying to find my niche, trying to find that thing, and nothing seemed to resonate with me like fighting does. And I don't know why, because at the end of the day, I've never been in a fight outside of competition, and I never ever want to be in one. I detest violence and that whole kind of thing that goes on in the real world, you know, but I'm aware of it, and subsequently I wanted to be able to take care of myself and protect myself. But jumping in the ring is, I love it. It's fun. I enjoy the process. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy the game of it. It is a game. It's a sport. There are rules. There are things that you're allowed to do and that you're not allowed to do. So, you know, and it's just about being the best I can be at that game. One of the main issues was monogamy. For some reason, I've had trouble being faithful, and I'm not exactly sure why that is, but that's one of the main things I'm working on within my therapy at the moment. That was the main issue, basically, was I cheated on my partner. I cheated on her about 5 years ago, and we tried to make it work. She took me back. At that point, she said, I really think you need to, you know, get some help. And at that point, I was like, yeah, okay. And my avoidant nature kicked in again, and I just kind of put it aside and didn't deal with it. And her kind of compliant nature just quite allowed for me to do that again. And then last year I fell into another pit of temptation and desire. And obviously there's stuff going on inside me that must allow for these things to happen. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of that. But unfortunately, that happened. And subsequently my partner left me. We have 3 children. We have a mortgage. It affected my work. I ended up having to leave my job, and I was trying to find a new job and was having trouble securing something around what I was trying to do. And ultimately, all those things compounding each other became this overwhelming entity unto its own that I couldn't hold up any longer. I guess I'm emotionally immature in that respect, and it's something that I need to improve on and grow. That's why I'm going through my therapy.
I used to cry pretty much every time I got really, really drunk. The rest of the time, everybody just thought I was that hard man, you know, and it was that kind of the truth serum. The alcohol kind of let it out, and I'd be that one crying at a party somewhere by myself in the bushes or something like that.
Most people put up a front. Most people will create a persona that they take out with them when they're dealing with the rest of the world, and I definitely have
a few personas. And I guess right from the early trauma stage of my life, there was an incident where my stepfather physically attacked my sister, and I was 10 years old at that time, and broke her teeth.
For me, I felt helpless.
You know, that's when my anxiety really kicked in. I had a panic attack.
I hated that feeling of not being able to do anything. And ever since then, I've done everything in my power to be a protector for myself, my family, my friends, and that's what I'm kind of known as.
Well, that's our entry to the New Zealand Radio Awards. We have entered into the community information section of the New Zealand Radio Awards for last year, 2018. Had to get that entry in early in 2019 to qualify for consideration, and certainly we'll let our listeners know in the middle of the year whether we've done very well. But a very intense story from Simon Frost. Describes himself as a hard man, kickboxer and musician. I caught up with Simon through Mind and Body, because he is a client of Mind and Body, just about a month ago, and he's doing pretty well. The fight that he talked about, going back into the ring, he had an injury as a result of that fight, and that put him out for a period of time. So, Simon, we hope to have him back in the studio. We're very appreciative of his cooperation in allowing us to edit that interview down and to submit it for the New Zealand Radio Awards. So you'll be looking forward, anticipating whatever the result is, Declan.
And I just want to just add in there that, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how many stories are out there, so varied with what people have experienced. And more importantly, I think, too, is how they've managed to get themselves back up on their feet and continue on, because some of them have faced some blooming huge things in their life, you know?
Yeah, well, certainly the last two guests that we've had, particularly Laura last week, who is also a client of Mind and Body, her personal journey can give us all hope and courage that it is capable, it's possible to come out the other end of some serious abuse and make a worthwhile contribution to society, which Laura is certainly doing. And she's doing it because she's got the courage to talk about her own mental health and mental health generally and lift the profile of mental health.
That's a huge process too, when you've got to think, how are my parents going to accept me? Are my friends going to accept me? How do I accept this and move on? So when I look at the health issues that I deal with, I think, God, they're a walk in the park, you know? They really are.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's valuable to make a comparison, but generally comparisons aren't all that useful for us, are they? But anyway, you've got treat coming up, Declan,
look,
haven't you, Joe?
I couldn't say no to you, because you've been sort of, he's been like a little puppy at my heels, sort of wanting Joe Cocker, and I thought, I better give him one. So today I've got Up Where We Belong, isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. It came from it's scrolling on my screen now, but it's like a blimmin' train sign telling me what's coming up. It's from the movie An Officer and a Gentleman, and it's Jennifer Warnes and Joe Cocker, and of course you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every single Tuesday on Planet FM 104.6, and you catch us, of course, between 12:30 and 1:30.
What tomorrow brings, way I feel. When it's raining, I keep it alive. The road is long. There are mountains in our way, but we climb a stair every day. The lift is up where we belong, where the eagles cry on the mountain high. The lift is up where we belong, far from the world below. Up where the winds blow. Looking behind.
With Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
Oh, I told you I was going to treat you. How could I leave you sitting there without giving you a Joe Cocker, eh?
Absolutely wonderful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it is actually. I love that song. It's really it sends me. That's probably why I go to sleep with my book all the time, because I've got him in my playlist, obviously, and
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
She's sort of like an accessory that, like, you know, comes along. Anyway, I've got something here about Are You Taking Too Many Pills? And it comes out of the North and South magazine for the April edition, which I had to grab. And it's mentioning in here that by the time we reach our 60s, a quarter of us will be taking a smorgasbord of medicines that we hope will extend our lives. And they discuss in here how much and at what cost. And they're saying if you're taking any more than 8 medications a day, I'm safe because I'm on 7, so that's cool. Anything over 8 or above, they say you need to perhaps look at reviewing them. And obviously they're saying that stopping medications is much more difficult than starting them. But one of the things I found interesting in here was that by the age of 65, 25% of us are on 5 or more long-term medicines. And that figure rises sharply to 53 by the age of 75 and nearly 60 at 85. So you'd be in that 60 mark, wouldn't you?
Now, hang on.
This
is age of 60 or the number of pills you're taking?
No, 60% at the age of 85, but you're all fair.
So 60% are taking eight or more.
And at the age of 85. I was being cheeky there because he's probably closer to 75 than 85.
supposed to say 65.
Yeah. So basically at 65, 25% of us are on five or more long-term medications. So that rises to 53% at 75 and 60% at 85. And what they're saying here is that the effect it can have on your kidneys working less and being able to process things. So essentially, to wrap this up in a nutshell, it's worth getting the North and South magazine for a read. There's a chap here who's 90, and he's being described as a deprescribing poster boy, if you can have such. Definitely it says here that it's a good idea to go back and chat with your doctor. And also when you go through for your medications, I'll just throw on there that I've got medication for methotrexate, and my doctor accidentally sent the script through saying take two per day. We're only supposed to take two on a Monday. So if I'd taken two per day, by the end of the week I'd be anywhere but upright, I think.
Yeah, so there is a big responsibility on those people that are prescribing and issuing these medications. Mm. I also had an example where I was prescribed 37.5 megs of antidepressant, and in fact, when I got the prescription home, or the pills home, and looked on the bottle, they were 75 strength. So, and I went back to the pharmacist and actually said, well, look, I'm a host of Mental Health Radio, and I'm going to mention this, not naming the pharmacist at all. But, yeah, let's just move to our...
Definitely important.
..our community notices. And tomorrow there's an event on called Au I Rangatahi. This is between 8.45 and 3 at the Trust Arena, which is 65 to 67 Central Park Drive, Henderson. It's a fun and uplifting day of workshops, keynote speakers, lots of kai and freebies. So that's a pretty good appealing statement to get people along, but it is tomorrow. It says that Au I is a rangatahi event which aims to raise suicide awareness and build resistance among the rangatahi Maori in the community. We will provide strength-based workshops to empower rangatahi, provide an opportunity to form new connections within the community, and give helpful information and tips to uplift and support rangatahi in their future. So if you want to contact about this event tomorrow, you can contact on email communications at trao.com. So this is being run by Terau Matatini. That's TERAU MATATINI. So that email address is communications at Terau Matatini. .com. So that is the Trust Arena, 65-67 Central Park Drive, Henderson, tomorrow.
And we'll catch you next week. I'm going to pop Sheldon back in his box now.
Great to go back into my little box. No, you can get me there.
Catch you next week, guys. Have a good one.
See ya.